Tax Update for Saturday, September the 1st, 2006. Welcome to Tax Update for Saturday, September the 1st, 2006. This week's Tax Update, and you get your own car. Cars provided to employees. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and this document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of this document or the associated podcast. Such a prohibited use includes using this podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. This podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Again, they're located on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. This week's tax update is going to deal with providing cars to employees. And this is kind of one of my vacation podcasts, shall we say, that's going to be done while I'm on the way to North Dakota. Not able to necessarily do, shall we say, fully topical or current development podcasts, but we'll try and put one or two of these up if I get a chance to get them both recorded. This one's being recorded before I leave Phoenix. Now, an employer-provided car is actually an issue that with small companies comes up quite often. In many ways, it's not nearly as exciting, shall we say, as looking at some of the bigger tax matters that we look at. It doesn't really rank up there with estate planning and doesn't really get up there with some of the other income tax work we might do, like charitable remainder trusts or some of the other neat things that really could make a difference in their tax liability, let's say profit sharing plans, qualified retirement plans. But to many of our clients, it seems like this is an incredibly important thing for them, is to figure out how to deal with their car. So the practical matter is that it's important to know how this works. Secondly, having a car owned by the company and provided to an employee introduces some complications that you have to deal with. And when you're in that position, you may have a client who either wants the owner of the company wants to have a company car, or who wants to entice certain employees into the company by giving them a company car and allowing them the use of the car for other purposes. In either case, you need to know what the rules are for how that is considered an employee's income, as well as whether or not the entity can get a deduction for the amounts that are expended that represent the personal use of the car by the employee in question. Now, it's probably best to start at the beginning here. Many times I listen to people who seem to think that, fringe benefits are always non-taxable unless there's something in the law that tells you they're taxable. Reality is, it works just the opposite. Section 61 tells us that essentially compensation for services is going to be considered income. In fact, 61 tells us all income from all sources, wherever that may be. But the issue goes on to note that it specifically notes compensation for services, including fringe benefits. So it's important to understand that before we get started, fringe benefits, by definition, are taxable income to the employee. Now, under Code Section 62, and if we have a Code Section 62 as well as some of the working condition fringe sections that we have, may allow us to exclude certain items if they either relate to the business, so it's a business expense and we net that to basically reduce what the employee picks up as income, or certain fringe benefits are granted special treatment under the law, and we're able to exclude them for those purposes. Now, the auto doesn't get that special treatment in general that's going to give us a fringe benefit that's going to make it excludable. Rather, we generally are allowed to exclude, though, the business use portion of the car to the extent the employee is driving the vehicle on company business and is properly accounted for. We can't exclude that from their income. Or to put it more properly, the way we end up doing this when we get done at the end of the day is we rather include in the employee's income the personal use portion. Now, there are a number of methods that can be used to calculate this, or I should say there is one official method that is supposed to be used, and then a few optional methods that are available. Now, generally, we want to use the optional methods, but realize that if you fail to qualify for the optional methods or you don't do them correctly, you end up back with the default method, which is not nearly as nice for the employee. Now, generally as noted, we have to make an allocation between what is the employer portion of the car use and the portion that represents personal benefit to the employee. Now, autos are covered by the listed property rules under Section 274D. Note, that is true even if the car in question is not considered a luxury auto for purposes of limiting its depreciation under Section 280 Cap F. That confusion sometimes arises where people believe that, oh, if I get the vehicle that's over 6,000 pounds on the gross vehicle weight, that I can ignore all of these rules. The fact is that the listed property rules cover any vehicle that's used for transportation with some limited exceptions. The luxury auto rules are the ones that apply to the specific subclass of that are considered quote-unquote luxury autos, and we all know the absurdity of that definition, but nevertheless it is a definition that's essentially fixed and we're stuck with for now. Now, basically, the other issue to consider is that an employer must consider any use of the vehicle that is not for that employer's business to be personal use of the car by the employee. So even if the employee documents use of the car in another business activity that the employee participates in, the employer cannot exclude that from income. Rather, in that case, the employee must pick up the entire amount of the, quote, personal use, including the use for other business purposes, and then have to deal with the deduction for that expense otherwise, either via an accountable plan on the process of, let's say, a second employer who they drove the car for and perhaps gave them an auto reimbursement, could have been the mileage allowance, could have been a reimbursement based on expenses under an accountable plan, but they have to deal with that issue separately. You're going to have to deal with the fact that you have to nevertheless include this balance in the employee's income, and it's up to the employee then to deal with the tax consequences. And that's found at Regulation 1.132-5A2i. So you need the cross-reference. That's where you go to prove that one out. What are the requirements to be able to exclude an amount from the employee's income? Well, as I noted, the general rule, if nothing else is done, is all use is considered personal and the entire computed value of the vehicle, the gross value of 100% of the vehicle used for the year, is going to be income to the employee. That's going to come because you're going to need to meet the substantiation rules under 274D. And that's true even if the rules themselves do not directly apply to the employer. So if you are the controller for a tax-exempt organization or a governmental unit, you're not off the hook for your employees. Your employees must still meet the 274D contemporaneous substantiation requirements, or you cannot exclude the value of any employer-provided auto from their income. The employer is required to obtain the necessary records to substantiate the claim business use. For the nonprofit or governmental employer's rules as to why those apply to them, if you have some questions about that, see Regulation 1.132-5C1, which states specifically that even if you're not otherwise subject to 274D because you don't pay income tax and so you don't have the issue of a deduction, you still must meet substantiation. As well, the employer, as I note, all employers, whether they are the nonprofit or the for-profit, have to obtain the necessary records to substantiate the claim business expenses as determined by the regulations under 274D, and that's found under Regulation 1.132-5C2. What happens if the employee fails to provide the documentation? All use of the vehicle will be deemed personal. That is found in Regulation 1.274-5TE1i. Now, the good news for an employer is I don't need to get the detailed records and the full copies of the employee's auto log and make the determination that the employee's records are substantial enough to meet the detailed 274 regulations. I can rely upon the employee's statement that they have such documentation as long as I have reason to believe. I don't have reason to believe these records do not exist. If I don't have any reason to doubt that, and that includes the employee winking at me and saying, oh, yeah, sure, I've got them, right, If as long as you don't have an expectation they don't exist, you can rely on the statement. If such a statement is obtained in lieu of the copies of the record, the employer, though, must retain a copy of that signed statement in their records. So you do have to have that. When the IRS comes in, you've got to be able to show them that. As an employer, the consequence of failing to have that is going to be that you're going to end up with a payroll tax problem and the lack of inclusion of those amounts in wages. That's an issue, plus the employee will have an issue. If the employer does not rely on the employee statement or the employer had a reason to believe the records might not exist, then the employer must maintain copies of the employee-submitted records in their file. So either you need the statement signed by the employee, in which case then the burden shifts to the employee to have the adequate backup documentation, or you have to get copies of adequate backup documentation and keep those in your file as the employer. That's found at Regulation 1.2745T at E2II. Now, there is an exception. If you have what's known as a qualified non-personal use vehicle, all use will be considered business use. That's defined at Regulation 1.13258. Such vehicles generally are ones that were just not likely to be used for personal purposes. And that's the ones included in the list found the temporary regulations under 274 at 1.274-5TK2II. Now, the types of vehicles that are in that list include clearly marked police and fire vehicles, ambulances, hearses, vehicles designed to carry cargo that have a gross vehicle weight of over 14,000 pounds, not 6, but 14, bucket trucks, otherwise cherry pickers, cement mixers, combines, a delivery truck that has seating only for the driver or for the driver plus a folding jump seat. So you're down to one seat or one seat and jump seat, and a passenger bus with a capacity of at least 20 passengers. Obviously, those particular listed items aren't generally going to be used for personal driving purposes, and the rules allow that we can treat all use there as business use. In essence, the employee is still allowed to drive at home. The presumption is if the employee drives at home, that type of vehicle, clearly they're driving at home simply because the employer wants it available for them in case for some reason they have to leave and go do something. But otherwise, that's not going to be a justification for leaving it out of the employee's income, even if you believe you have a reason why the employee should have the car at home. Now, there are some options the employer can adopt to reduce record keeping. And you can eliminate the detailed record keeping if you adopt one of the following four policies. Note, these policies do not work in all cases if you are a control employee, meaning you have a greater than a certain level of ownership in the company. Now, the first exception is the employer can adopt a written policy, must be maintained in writing, that no personal use of the vehicle is permitted except for de minimis personal use. And the example the IRS uses in this case is a stop for lunch between business deliveries. As well, the employer must reasonably believe that such personal use is not taking place. Again, you can't just paper this over by putting this policy out there and then turn a blind eye to the fact that the employee has driven that vehicle on a cross-country personal trip. That's not going to work. The written policy has to conform with the requirements found in the additional temporary regulation under 274, the reg at 1.274-6TA1. And the employer must maintain sufficient records to demonstrate that there's compliance, that they've been looking, they're not just being blind, with limitations on the use outlined in regulation 1.274-6TA2i. Now, number two says you can get rid of the detailed record-keeping requirement if you adopt a policy that allows no personal use except for commuting and the same sort of de minimis use noted above. So therefore, the employee could stop at Starbucks on the way into work. That's not going to be a problem. That's de minimis personal use, but again, cannot take that cross-country trip. That's under temporary reg 1.274-6TA3. Again, you must have a written policy statement meeting the requirements of Reg 1.274-6TA1. If you don't have that written policy statement, it's not going to be any good, and the policy statement in both cases is going to need to be communicated to the employees. As well, again, you cannot be aware that this policy is being ignored. Number three applies generally to agricultural entities only. If the vehicle is used primarily directly in the business of farming in the course of a normal business day, the employer is allowed to just automatically treat 75% of the use of the automobile as business use, plus any amount included in the income of the employee. Now that's a double test. So that means essentially you can treat 75% as business automatically, and then you can get the rest of it by what they're saying by a backdoor approach here is by treating 25% of the use as personal use by the employee. That's under Reg 1.274-6TB. Now, note that this tells us the regulation does note the phrase directly in connection with business of farming means that vehicle must be used directly in connection with the business of operating a farm, which it defines as cultivating land or raising or harvesting any agricultural or horticultural commodity, or the raising, shearing, feeding, caring for, training, and management of animals, or incidental trips thereto, such as trips to the feed and supply store. And that's under Reg 1.274-6TB2. So again, we have a special farming exception here where we just blanket get 75% business use, period. Number four, the employer may elect for all but a greater than 5% owner or related party to treat 100% of the use of the automobile as non-business use. In that case, the employer gets a full deduction for the business expenses related to the auto. Now that's Reg 1.280F-6T2D. Now, essentially, what that one is saying and why the 5% business owner can't be counted is because a 5% business owner you can never count as business use for purposes of the depreciation rules. Any use that gets its business use status only because the employee is considering that as compensation. In essence, the rules under 280 cap F, disallow treatment or disallow a deduction for amounts that are considered compensation to the control employee, the 5% employee. Now, if a taxpayer elects to use one of these methods on a return and it's later determined the employer failed to meet the requirements of the provision in question, you can't go back and said, well, I would have met one of the others. I did have enough to meet one of the other rules. The fact is, once the employer has made his choice of which one of these exceptions is the one he claims he falls under, that's it. So if the employer claimed to, let's say, adopt number two and allow nothing except for commuting for his employee, it turns out he didn't have the proper policy statement, so he turns around and says, well, I'm in farming, therefore I can treat 75%. No. Having elected number two, you shut off number three. So you have to pick your poison and live with it. Once you pick your poison, you're stuck, and that's under Reg 1.274-6TD. Now, how do we compute how much to include in the W-2? Well, unless the employer elects to make use of one of the three special method evaluation rules that we're going to talk about under Reg 1.61-21, the vehicle must be calculated at the fair market value of the benefit conferred based upon the total facts and circumstances. How you do that is you base it on the amount you would pay to lease a comparable vehicle for a period comparable to the period the vehicle is available for the employee's use. So you'd go out and say if the employee was allowed to basically use it for a year, you go out and compute what it would have cost you to lease that particular vehicle for the year. And essentially, that is the personal use. That's 100% personal use business, or 100% number. And then you compute the percentage of personal use. Now, this is important because if you fail to dot your I's and cross your T's under one of the alternate methods, which are the ones we tend to use, you're going to fall back to this method, and we'll get to a case that describes that shortly. But there are three special valuation rules that are available to an employer in lieu of the facts and circumstances. The three methods are detailed in the materials. The first one, which unfortunately is available only for a limited number of vehicles because we're going to get to a cost limit on the vehicle that's going to render this moot for a number of vehicles that would be provided. But there is the cents per mile method, which is probably one of the simplest. That's found at Reg 1.61-21E. If a vehicle qualifies for use of this method, it's kind of the reverse of what we get for deducting the mileage allowance for business use. We evaluate on a cents per mile basis based on the figure the IRS publishes each year for the reimbursement on a cents per mile basis for business use. For 2006, that amount per mile is 44.5 cents per mile under Revenue Proc 2005-78. Now that sounds pretty good, and it sounds like something we like to go with, but the problem is that amount can only be used for vehicles valued at less than the amount published annually by the IRS. And for 2006, that maximum value is $15,000 for a passenger automobile and $16,400 for a truck or van. That's Revenue Procedure 2006-15. As well, to be eligible for the use of this rule, the vehicle must be driven at least 10,000 miles during the year, and the vehicle must be primarily used during the year by employees. And that's under Reg 1.61-21E1II. So there are a couple of tight conditions to using the cents per mile rule. The key issue there becomes, if you qualify for it, it's fairly simple. They submit the mileage that is personal, or you get the deemed personal mileage from the simplified method you had elected above. Remember, if you said they could do commuting per day, then their commuting miles are personal. Basically, but we use that. If you use the 75% rule for farming, then 25% is personal. So we have those particular rules that we use. Then we can just use the cents per mile valuation method just by their total mileage. However, we do have those strict restrictions. Now, method number two is the automobile lease valuation rule found at Reg 1.61-21D. The annual lease valuation tables can be used to value the automobile for the employee. Now, different methods apply whether the vehicle is available to the employee for the entire year. That's just using the ALV factor from the table, is available for at least a 30-day period during the year. At that point, you merely prorate the ALV value by the percentage of the year that was outstanding based upon the number of days, or if it's available for less than 30 days. Unfortunately, there, we do a multiplier that significantly raises the value of the vehicle. So a less than 30 days vehicle is going to be valued at a much higher value per day. The point of that being, at less than 30 days, you're essentially looking at Hertz, not the actual long-term lease of a vehicle, and they're deciding Hertz charges more per day than it costs you per day to lease a vehicle for the full term, you know, for a number of years. The lease value is determined using the tables found at Reg 1.61-21D2II. If the employer provides the fuel as well for that vehicle, an additional 5.5 cents mile per gallon must be added to the value computed. So that's the automobile lease valuation rule. Finally, we have the commuting valuation rule. The commuting valuation rules applies a value of $3 per day to each commuting round trip, or $1.50 for a one-way trip if certain conditions are met, if personal use is limited to commuting and de minimis personal use. As you may notice, this is the one that kind of pairs itself up with the restriction the employer provides that you can only use it for business and you can take the vehicle home, but that's it. I want you to drive it home, drive it back. If that happens, then we can use the commuting valuation rule, which is $3 per day. However, the method cannot be used by certain control employees, and this is a different category than the 5%ers we were talking about. That includes employees who are directors, greater than 1% shareholders, certain officers of the corporation whose income exceeds an inflation-adjusted amount announced each year by the IRS, now in 2005 that was $85,000, or an employee whose income exceeds a second inflation-adjusted amount announced annually by the IRS, in 2005 that was $170,000. So note, there's a lower number for certain officers than a higher value that regardless of your title with the employer, you're not eligible to use the commuting valuation rule. So the only one of the three that would be available in every case is the automobile lease valuation rule. My experience has been that for many small employers, that's obviously the most popular one of the group because the other two, either only a few of the vehicles count or, you know, we have other problems. The one we could apply to everybody is the ALV. Now, note, the BMW case, BMW of North America, which was basically a case that held that if you do not strictly comply with the special valuation rules, formal requirements, then you've got to go back to the general facts and circumstances case. That particular case and the regulation referenced to back that up was Reg 1.61-21C5. Citations for BMW North America, if you have the USTC cases, 99.1 USTC paragraph 50,255. If you have the American Federal Tax Reporter set of cases, 83 AFTR 2nd paragraph 99-413. Those are your citations to get back to the BMW case. But what that holds is that if you fail to comply with those valuation rules methods strictly, for instance, you apply the cost cents per mile method to a vehicle that didn't qualify, or you use a commuting valuation rule for an employee that doesn't qualify, you can't drop back to the ALV. You rather must go all the way back to the general rule. The general rule is going to use actual lease costs, not the IRS tables, and is going to use actual facts and circumstances test on what type of value lease you'd have. Now, I should point out, you always could use that method if you thought it was better for you. My guess is you're going to find that method is more trouble to use and not likely to be better for you if you went through the trouble. As well, it's important to note that any use by a 5% owner or employee related to that person within the meaning of Section 267B for non-business use will not be considered qualified business use for purposes of the limitation on depreciations found in Section 280F, even if that amounts including the compensation of the individual, or the vehicle is leased to that individual, and that's under IRC Section 280F D6C. If we have a greater than 5% owner, you cannot take a deduction for the personal use, even if the owner is including that amount in their income. So that's important. If you have a corporation that owns the vehicle, the greater than 5% owner is using it, their personal use is not allowed for purposes of the depreciation limitation 280F. Now that has a couple of impacts. Note, a key one here is remember what happens if business use drops below 50%. In that case, you have to go back to straight line over the life of the asset. And you have to recapture any excess depreciation or excess set 179 you took in prior years. Remember, Section 179 is not available if business use is less than 50%. So if you have a vehicle that's used more than 50% for business use by the officer this year, you take Section 179. Next year, the use drops below 50%, or he doesn't maintain the records. And the theory is if the records aren't there, there's no business use. Use drops below 50%, there's immediate recapture of that Section 179. So it's important for employers considering providing vehicles to people who are going to be in that class that we can't consider the compensation to understand what's going to happen if that employee doesn't justify the business use. It's not just, oh shucks, we get hit for payroll taxes. It's going to be, oh shucks, you lose your depreciation deductions and you may have significant recapture and a lot of income coming at you in the year in question. Now, for all other employees, such business use, if we put in their W-2, we can treat it as business use. And as long as it's properly included in their compensation, so we compute the number correctly, and any required withholding is handled properly. It's a two-prong test found in Section 280 Cap F, D6CI triple cap I. In this case, if the personal use is greater than 50%, it's crucial that payroll tax reporting be handled properly each year. Remember, if you foul up the payroll tax reporting, you don't get to consider the business use as, you don't consider the personal use as business use. That can drop you below the magic 50%. And again, we could be back to recapturing depreciation. That could be especially troublesome if you took 179 on these vehicles because they were greater than 6,000 pounds. This was a vehicle you had offered to purchase for the new controller you were trying to attract. And you said, I'll put it in, I'll buy this vehicle. You can use it for personal use. If they fail to meet all the rules and we don't include the proper amount in their income, then we can't consider that business use, and all of a sudden we would lose our 179 deduction, especially if that particular controller has very little business use or, as noted, failed to maintain the record, so now we have to consider zero of it to be business use. Now, if you're an employee, what do you have to consider? Well, if you're an employee, you have to realize there is an exposure to you too. You have to make sure the employer is properly following the rules to substantiate the business use. Since a failure of the employer to follow the rules could cause the IRS to include the entire value of the automobile in the employee's income and then tell the employee they have to take it as employee business expense for the business use. Well, given the fact that employee business expense is non-deductible for AMT and we have the 2% of AGI limitations, this is not a good result. Now, note, most employers are going to likely decide to rely on the employee statement. We talked about that earlier for business use rather than require submission of detailed documentation. If an employee is in that case, as most will be, the employee has to remember they must maintain the documentation. Because even though their employer is not going to demand it before they will exclude it from their W-2, if the employee is examined, it's up to the employee to produce the evidence. Otherwise, the IRS adds the value back into their income for the year, and the employee gets stuck with the tax bill. That's a problem for the employee. Now, if the rules are properly followed, this can be a very nice employee benefit, very useful and a good way to attract employees. Can even be useful in the right circumstances for an officer or other person working in the company, but it's very, very important when dealing with autos to dot your I's, cross your T's, and follow the rules properly for vehicles used by employees. Now, as I say, I'm on my wonderful trip to North Dakota. Should be by the time you guys download this. I hopefully am going to upload this just before I leave for North Dakota, but it should be available on the websites and ready to come. There may be another podcast next week. We'll see if I get one recorded somewhere in the mix, either before I leave for North Dakota or somewhere during the North Dakota trip. But if not, we'll be back in 2 weeks. This has been the Tax Update. Again, as always, the Tax Update is brought to you by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. You can visit them to find out about all their tax materials and newsletters they offer. This has been the Tax Update.